Are you ready to take your business to the next level? Every day there are countless books and articles that are published offering the key on how to make your business a success. It's easy to feel overwhelmed trying to keep up and run your business. That's why Deb Creer created the Business Power Hour. Keep up on the latest trends, best practices, and techniques for how to make your business a success. Let the Business Power Hour do the heavy work for you.
Good morning, good morning. I am Deb Creer, and I am passionate about giving professionals the tools that they need to make themselves and their businesses as successful as possible. And, you know, this happens every once in a while. I talk to a guest where I know absolutely nothing about what they're going to be talking about. And I love those conversations, right? Because I get to learn along with our audience. And we're going to have so much fun today. So please join me in welcoming Taylor Costa Van Patten to our program today. Welcome, Taylor. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Deb. I am doing well. Reaching you from New York City here. We're in our Midtown Manhattan offices looking out over Central Park. It's a beautiful gray day, 40 degrees. It was spring a little while back, but
spring not, right? You know, and I'm in Atlanta where it's raining hard. So hopefully our power doesn't just all of a sudden disappear, which is, you know, tends to happen every once in a while here. So let me tell people a little bit about you and then we will jump into this because it is going to be a fascinating discussion. So Taylor Costa Van Patten is the president of Braeburn Whiskey in the United States. He is also a licensed and registered securities broker and former financial planner and fiduciary financial advisor across several institutions in the United States. Well, first of all, you're not selling whiskey. I know that. But tell us a little bit more about how it is that you got to where you are today, and then we will really jump into this.
Well, at the end of the day, I am selling whiskey. It's not whiskey for drinking. It's whiskey for profit, for diversification, for wealth management. But, you know, the journey here has been interesting, to say the least. And that's because this is an interesting asset class. And it takes, I think, unique people to get into projects like this. So I have worked in financial services coming up on 8 years now as a registered securities broker, investment advisor. You know, for many years, I was working in traditional assets or traditional wealth management, stocks and bonds, good old fashioned stocks, bonds, and cash. And, you know, I found in the last couple of years as we entered the pandemic and some of the economic and market turmoil, it just became very obvious to me and really anybody who was looking at it, these cornerstone asset classes that we all use in our 401ks and stock and bond portfolios to grow wealth in the long term, we're obviously in for many years to come of potential volatility, shakiness and uncertainty. There's always volatility in these markets, but we're experiencing some record ups and downs these days. So I wanted to make sure that I was working in a in an area that could really actually help people protect and diversify their wealth. And what we've seen in the last decade or so in particular in financial services is the explosion of alternative assets. And alternative just means everything that's not stocks and bonds. So I found my way into fine art investing with the largest buyer and seller of art in the world. And I was located by this group of Scottish entrepreneurs who asked me, Taylor, do you want to bring Scottish and Japanese whiskey to America for the first time as a securitized and regulated asset class? And I said, of course I do. Who wouldn't want to be a pioneer and bring something to America for the first time, especially something that this country is so passionate and excited about, which is whiskey. That's where we how we got here. And we've been here in America for close to 1 year, even though we've been operating internationally with a lot of success for the better part of a decade. We've opened up the Whiskey Vault here in Midtown Manhattan, which is behind me, and started our offering roughly a year ago.
I love it. You know, and it is financial planning, all of those things are very confusing. And, you know, no matter what, folks, we want to make sure that you talk with your trusted financial advisors and planners before you do anything. So, you know, always make sure that, you know, that you're doing that. But, you know, or at least do your own research. You know, that's the thing. It's, okay, so I have one of those simple, basic questions to start with. Braeburn Whiskey is W-H-I-S-K-Y. And we also know that there is whiskey with an E. Explain the difference.
Yeah. Well, whiskey is a huge global class of, of spirit, of alcohol beverage. It's largely made by grains around the world. But, you know, you can find American whiskey. You can find Irish, Indian, Japanese. I've had Australian whiskey recently. That was pretty good. And all of these things are effectively the same thing. They're grains that have been distilled into a strong alcoholic beverage. But two countries and two countries only, which are the two countries that we focus on, fill whiskey with a Y. And that's because it's pretty intrinsically connected. Scotland, which has been making whiskey for at least 500 years at this point, that we have records on, and Japan, which recently had their 100-year anniversary.
And that just baffles me. I had never heard of Japanese whiskey.
Nobody has heard of Japanese whiskey until they exploded on the international scene with a lot of awards in the last 20 years. And now everybody wants Japanese whiskey. So you can't really get it. That's why it can be such an attractive investment. Scarcity. If you want something that a lot of people want, and there's enough of, that can be quite good for the owner of the asset. But we're in Japanese and Scotch whiskey, which is whiskey with no E, because we see those marketplaces and those spirits being some of the most premium investment grade whiskey on the planet. And that has to do with the heritage, the the brand, the recognition of the quality of the spirit, the fact that they are, to a degree, the gold standard of whiskey around the world. And, you know, the fact that people pay really good money for old Scottish and Japanese whiskeys. That's how our clients can profit.
You know, and I love the tradition of it. You know, it's especially in Scotland, because hello, that's me. You know, I am a good chunk of me is Scottish, and I have toured in Scotland. Several big distilleries there, and just thought they were great. But you know, it is that history and that culture and that passion. And I love the fact I was on your website. So again, that's Braeburn Whiskey, and you have a flyover tour of Braeburn Whiskey, of the estate. And I just, you know, I love all that. Like I said, I totally geek out on some of those things. And I think that, you know, is part of, as you said, kind of that appeal is, you know, there is that rich, rich history. So talk to us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. I mean, there's an extraordinary mystique. The entire nation of Scotland is geographically beautiful, ancient history, castles, lakes, moors, meadows, glens. And whiskey has been an inherent part of the culture for literally hundreds of years, at least that we have a record of. It could go way, way back.
Right. They grow up drinking it, right?
And I mean, yes. So, you know, heritage and the fact that Scottish whiskey has been a regulated spirit, meaning the quality has been tightly controlled by His Majesty's regulatory bodies, literally 200 years now, means that globally, people expect Scotch whiskey to be the incredible whiskey that it is. And so that's what commands such a premium price. It's also a pretty small country that is feeding the world with the most exported spirit on the planet. So again, big supply and demand issue, and that's how a lot of people can benefit. But the heritage, you know, we have offices in Edinburgh, Glasgow, those ancient cities. We have an office in Shanghai, here in New York City, in Barcelona. We've got warehouses where we've got to hold our barrels of whiskey for our clients and for ourselves, peppered around Scotland. So, yeah, anybody who owns a barrel of whiskey with us is very invited to come and visit their cask or even enjoy a dram. If you're an investor at a certain level, we'll get you an all-expenses-paid trip out to Scotland. We'd love to host you at some of our offices and let you enjoy the fruits of your investment.
I love that. Now, you know, this is not an inexpensive prospect. Let me just put it that way. This is for the more discriminating investors, might be the best way to put it. You know, and I mean, there's obviously people can invest anywhere from 50 cents to hundreds of thousands of dollars. But, you know, it's, I love this fact that it is much more for the discriminating investor. You know, you can give those tours, all of those things. And I think, to me, I love that because it's, you're really showing them how much you value them as an investor, and I like that idea. And again, it's, you know, it's not for everyone, and anybody who is interested should talk to you about that. But it's, it is much more. And I think part of it is that mystique, that history, that culture.
Yeah. Well, for us, you know, there are thresholds or requirements or minimums to be able to participate in the offer, just so it's clear. We are, like I mentioned earlier, an SEC regulated issuer of securities, right? Mm-hmm. The government knows my name. Mm-hmm. They have my background, my fingerprints. Right. They've taken
out this is blood. Very reputable, folks. This is not fly by night.
Right. Yeah. So the SEC has rules about who's allowed to participate in private or alternative or market investments like what we do. So a person does need to be, in order to participate, what's called an accredited investor, which is a pretty broad swath of American society. There are millions of people who are eligible in this country. But generally, to be eligible to participate in the offering that we have and other private or alternative offerings, you need to be earning around $200,000 in income annually, personal level, or $300,000 jointly together with your spouse, or have a net worth of $1 million plus, excluding the residence where you live, your primary residence.
Okay.
Once you have met those qualifications, or if you meet those qualifications, people can come on board and work with us with a minimum investment of around $1,000 US. Some people start at 50, some people work with us at $1 million and everything in between. It just depends on your financial situation and what makes the most sense for you.
Right. You know, and I have to put my marketing hat on now, because obviously we talk a lot on this program about who your target market is. And I've worked with so many people who, when I say, who is your target market? Excuse me, they look at me, they smile sweetly, and they say, everyone.
Yeah, right.
And it does. I don't care what the product is. No, you know, you are not trying to reach everyone. And for any business, you absolutely have to figure out who you're trying to reach. And, you know, we've got lots of different names for it. We've got target market. We've got avatars. We've got all of those things. And, you know, obviously you have done that. You've done that very, very well. And what I love about it, and for anybody, you know, whatever your business is and what you're selling, is the first thing is people are kind of self-opted out, right? They know, this sounds interesting, this sounds fun, but I can't do that. I can't buy that car. I can't, you know, do whatever. They just know I'm not in that market. So they've kind of self-opted out. And so as the business, what that means is you're not spending time marketing to people who cannot buy from you. I've told this story several times where, you know, I was at a networking event one time, and we go around the room like you do, right? And it was, you know, what do you sell and who are you trying to reach? And this woman sold skincare products. And because we all have skin, she said, my target audience is everyone. And we all went, oh, that's nice. You know, and then we thought about it, and she got no referrals from us. None at all. I mean, we all had skin, but none of us could refer to her, right? So worked with her to develop the fact that she still needed to have that niche. So what she said was she sells skincare products for teenage boys with acne. And immediately we all went, we know those, right? Yeah. So then we could refer to her. Now, obviously she could sell the product to anybody, but, you know, so then it, you know, kind of expanded a bit to teenage girls, older, yeah, I mean, all sorts of things. But the second she had that niche, we all knew somebody we should refer to her. And so, you know, that's what I love about, you know, what you have done. And you, like you just said, you are very clear about who it is, who you are trying to at least have an initial discussion with, and who is just going to think, wow, this is fun. And they watch the video of the estate and go, that's pretty. And I love that. And so, you know, why did you decide to really be this high-end type of investment?
Well, it is a high-end investment. You know, realistically, Scotch whiskey is
the premium product.
Mm-hmm. The premium product. We only deal in single malt whiskey from high-end young brands and high-end brands with incredible heritage. Mm-hmm. So although there's money to be made in on every level, whether it's bottom shelf, mid shelf, or top shelf, most people know instinctively that you you know, bet on luxury products and luxury asset classes because bought by wealthy people. Mm-hmm. And wealthy people generally are going to do well in most economies, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's why multi-million dollar Picasso paintings sold their value. Mm-hmm. That's why incredibly expensive collectible cars maintain their value. You know, the marketplace, the people that are interested in these, the demand for them
right.
is supplied by a class of people in the world who are well insulated from economic trouble. And that's what the reasons that makes premium Scotch whiskey so stable and attractive, generally speaking.
Right.
So it's not so much a decision of ours as just the reality of the asset class or the product that we deal in. It,
right.
it has spent hundreds of years building up that heritage, that air and reputation of quality. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're here today. We want to bring it to the world.
Right. Well, and let's be honest, kind of no matter what happens with the economy, and especially sometimes if it goes south, spirits tend to get consumed more.
People now, drink you, on in good times, people drink in bad times, people drink on a Wednesday night at 4 p.m., right?
Now, you know, yeah, Scotch whiskey is more expensive. You know, that's why I don't drink it very often because, you know, it is very much a treat. And it was really funny because I remember in one of the places we were in, when we were touring in Scotland, you know, we were talking about how very smooth it was. You know, a lot of times you see people, you know, take a sip and they make the face, right? Because it burns all the way down. And, you know, Scotch whiskey. No, it's very smooth. But, you know, the gentleman who was doing the tour, he said, if you want something that burns, go have some bourbon.
Yeah. Yeah, he's honest, right?
Yeah. You know, and we just thought that was really funny. But yeah, I mean, it's an investment that is obviously going to hold its value over time. So, you know, I joked at the start that you weren't selling whiskey and you are, but you're not selling, you know, like you're not going to liquor stores. You're not doing all of those things. So when someone invests, they're actually buying a cask? Is that how that works?
Yeah. So you were just talking about, you know, the smoothness of Scotch whiskey. Mm-hmm. And it's, I think we should back up to that because
okay.
A lot
See,
of that,
I do swirl a lot, so.
From all day, I'll swirl with you. You know, that smoothness, that drinkability, the roundness and complexity of Scotch whiskey comes, for the most part, from the aging and maturation process, which is in any kind of spirit around the world, whether we're talking about bourbon or Irish or American or Japanese, it all comes from having the spirit live and rest and mature in a wooden barrel. Mm-hmm. It's actually the chemical action of the whiskey leaching into the wood and being squeezed out with temperature cycles that changes the spirit. Mm-hmm. It takes away a lot of the harshness and gives it incredible depth and richness of flavor and complexity. And it smooths it out. It makes it a lot more enjoyable over time. Now, the reason why the guy said, you want to, you know, have something harsh, go drink a bourbon. No offense to bourbons, but most bourbons are aged for 2 years.
Right. And that's why they're also mixed in a lot of that's times with something
often
else.
Used as mixed drinks. There are some wonderful bourbons out there, but in America, people really don't like bourbons much older than 5-7 years. They get a little bit overly oaked, people say.
Okay.
And whiskey, in the last couple of years, we've seen extraordinary expressions go out as old as 50, 70, 80 years.
Wow.
Old in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. So Scotch whiskey can effectively mature in perpetuity or at least an entire human lifetime and still be at least sought after. It might be intense, but it will also be extraordinarily scarce, which is the name of the game. So it's that whole maturation process that makes whiskey inside of a barrel one of, in our opinion, the most attractive asset classes out there. The barrel actually changes the product. And for most people, they think it makes it better. So there are very few things out there, very few assets that actually get better with time. Houses degrade, they get money and like problems, paint.
Yeah, your car depreciates the second you drive it off the lot.
Really speaking, right? Almost everything decays over time, but whiskey gets better. And so that's one of the reasons, along with inflation as well as scarcity, that getting invested into an individual barrel or a dozen or 100 barrels of whiskey over time, historically, based on our data, has outpaced effectively every other asset class that we've measured against.
Right.
So it goes very well for our clients.
And it is very much a quality type of thing. You know, I don't think that you can make whiskey in anything except a barrel Are there people who are putting it in, oh gosh, those stainless tanks?
Scottish whiskey is so heavily regulated.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. Single malt Scotch whiskey is three ingredients. It's water, barley, yeast. Mm-hmm. And then you have to put it in a barrel for at least 3 years legally, or it's not whiskey.
Okay.
But as you can see, when you go to the liquor store, you look at shelves, you're mostly going to see bottles and expressions that are 12 plus years old, because that's that's what people demand who are discerning drinkers of whiskey. So in Scotland, no, you can't have it rest in a stainless steel drum. It doesn't do anything for flavor. It's inert. Right.
In America, if anything, it would make it worse.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. in America, there are some beverages that are held in stainless tankers, because regulations are just different here, but not in Scotland. It's all, I mean, the wood, according to PhD whiskeyologists, gives you something like 80% of the final character of the whiskey. Right. That's why wood is so important. And that's why people are very choosy about the types of wood that they put their whiskey in. It could be.
Is it always oak?
Very commonly oak.
Okay.
You know, there are some exceptions and some, you know, crazy mad scientists that we work with that are trying some different woods, but oak for the long term has been shown to be, you know, the most attractive in terms of flavor profile. But you can see American bourbon barrels used because they're seasoned with that bourbon flavor, which gives whiskey an incredible character. You can see Mizunara oak from Japan. You can see IPA barrels, champagne, white wine, wine, sherry, port, tequila barrels I've seen, mezcal barrel. Crazy with barrels to give your Scotch whiskey really interesting finishing character.
Right.
So there's a lot of interesting combinations. That's why there are 150 distilleries and 60,000 different expressions of whiskey bottles out there.
I love it. You know, and my husband is a craft beer fan, and we've been to several breweries where they use old whiskey barrels for their, to make their beer. And it does give it a totally different taste, because not only is it picking up the wood overtones, it is picking up the, you know, the wood obviously has absorbed the whiskey. And so it's a very different type of beer. And, you know, like with any spirit, or, you know, people have their specific taste. They like this, they don't like that. You know, I don't like sweet wine. I like, you know, reds, all of those various things. But yeah, beer that has been put in whiskey barrels, it's pretty good stuff.
Yeah. And vice versa. I bet if you could find, I was talking about that whiskey with an IPA barrel, and it's very hard to find. But if you can pick one up for your husband, I bet he'd probably be a big fan.
Probably. So yeah, I think that would be great. Well, you know, it is this is so interesting. And, you know, we mentioned the fact that this is pretty unique. You know, and most people are used to investing in stocks and bonds, right? You know, they whether they do it themselves or they go through a broker. Do they have to, you know, and, you know, please give a disclaimer if you need to, they can obviously deal directly with you, and not go through a broker, correct?
So we are a broker.
Okay. Yes, you are. I'm sorry. You mentioned that you are registered with the SEC.
Realistically, a dealership for whiskey, right? Well, we don't produce any whiskey. What we do is we have researched and identified the four distilleries in Scotland and Japan that we think are the most attractive investments in the industry. And we deal almost exclusively in their whiskeys. And so people come to us to be their portfolio managers, their advisors in whiskey, to make an allocation that fits within their overall strategy and help them achieve their goals. So we are the professional team of whiskey investment specialists, or international, you know, whiskey investment, specialist. And so our job is to be the middleman that gets you access to something that otherwise you quite literally cannot get your hands on.
Well, and you have done obviously the research, you know, and I think that with any time somebody is doing investing, I mean, that really is something that, you know, you have to do your research. You want to make sure something is stable. You want to make sure it's going to hold its value. Now, there are certainly short-term investments that, you know, have they're very beneficial for people, but it would be pretty hard for just the average person to research whiskey. So that's where I love the fact that you guys do all of that very in-depth, detailed research.
Yeah, and that is a pretty significant barrier to entry for anybody in any investment or asset classes, knowledge and access.
Right.
And, you know, to be very clear, whiskey especially in Scotland, is such an insular, mm-hmm. Tight-knit community. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of data to go around. So we try to make it as data-rich mm-hmm. and transparent as we mm-hmm. possibly can. But the major challenges in whiskey investment are transparency and data. Mm-hmm. Right. How do you know you're getting a high-quality mm-hmm. barrel or a high-quality whiskey? Mm-hmm. How especially do you know you're getting it at a real mm-hmm. fair price and you're mm-hmm. not being charged markups and commissions by your broker? Mm-hmm. We solve for that because when somebody buys a barrel of whiskey from us, they're buying it at the actual factory price mm-hmm. from the distillery, mm-hmm. the market value. There's no markups. We don't.
So if they were to call them and say, hey, we want to do this, they'd be told the same price.
Yeah, they'd be told the same price. They'd also be told, hey, you've got to talk to Taylor.
They'd go away.
But yeah, you can check the price either online or directly by contacting the distillery. We don't charge markups or broker mm-hmm. fees.
Right. Which is why you're a fiduciary, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, to legally speaking, not a fiduciary anymore, but I do have to provide advice in a mm-hmm. client or investor's mm-hmm. best interest. That is mm-hmm. the legal standard for me as a broker.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and I mean, that obviously makes sense. If you provide bad advice, people aren't going to work with you. Mm-hmm. It's just, that's the thing. But again, we want people to do their research as to who they're working with. Because whether, again, you're investing $5 or millions, you want to make sure, A, that it is safe, and B, that you're going to get a return. I mean, you're not just putting it there to put it there. You want returns on that, and that's where it does get tricky and confusing. And so I love that, you have all this information. Your website has tons of information. I actually didn't sign up because I thought, well, I'm not in that category, so I don't need phone calls, but you've got all sorts of great information. And again, we encourage anybody, when you're going to be working with someone, do your research, make sure that they know what they're doing, because we don't have money to waste. Even if you have millions of dollars, you don't want to waste it, right? That's why you have millions of dollars.
Yeah. Hey, I encourage everybody to look around. We're not the only people in the world that do what we do, but we're the only people that are doing it right, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. There are no other firms out there that, are focused on premium Scottish, mm-hmm. Japanese whiskey mm-hmm. that have a regulated issuance of securities that are distributed and overseen by a registered broker dealer. Mm-hmm. There's literally nobody else that has the level of oversight mm-hmm. And kind of the secure investing environment that we do. So we're very proud that we have spent a lot of money and resources mm-hmm. coming to America and doing it right. Because mm-hmm. other people have tried in the past and mm-hmm. done it wrong. And the SEC said, no, you can't do that. So we decided to go a different route, and people mm-hmm. feel very comfortable and confident. Even though it is really hard to deal with Securities and Exchange Commission rules and regulations, mm-hmm. they're for a reason.
Right. They're there to protect the investors.
Keep investors mm-hmm. as protected as possible.
Mm-hmm. Right. And obviously, nothing is guaranteed, folks. Always remember that. Nothing is guaranteed. Death and taxes, right? Isn't that what they say? and there are ways to at least get around some of the taxes. We can't get around death, but always remember that there is risk, and some people are risk adverse and some people like risk. It's funny, when I was much younger and doing my own investing, I liked risk because I like to see the big numbers, right? But I also knew those big numbers could become really small numbers really pretty fast. Cardinal rule, never invest what you can't afford to lose, right? So I was very careful about all of that. But then I married someone who is in the industry of financial world, who went, oh, not this risky stuff, right? Yeah. Which has obviously made us have a much better portfolio now. But but what I love is that there are so many options that are out there. And there are some who are just going to do the S&P. They're just going to do, whatever. And that's fine. That's perfectly fine. But it's so much fun to see that there are these very cool options that people can do.
Yeah. And, any financial professional, including your partner, mm-hmm. will tell you it's all about your mix, your allocation.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, yeah. Diversification is key.
Yeah. And you can be in the S&P 500, even if you're approaching or in your retirement years. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be generally a smaller portion of your portfolio. Right. Mm-hmm. People generally come to me and come to whiskey because they want to actually reduce the overall volatility and risk in their portfolio, right? Quote, risks in whiskey are very different. It's not so much a significant risk of losing money because whiskey matures and gets better with age. Generally, in history, has increased value over time. Mm-hmm. So it's not so much about losing significant amounts of money. It is just the fact that you can only be in it if you're a long-term investor. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're going to say, don't do this. Mm-hmm. It's not about quick flips. It's not about turning you know, a crypto Bitcoin profit a couple of months or a year or whatever. It's about being in it for 5, 10. Mm-hmm. Some people tell me they're in it for 15 or 20 years. Mm-hmm. I'm the same way. I bought the same barrels of, or I bought the first barrels of whiskey here in America within our offering. And I'm in it for probably a 20-year time. So yeah, whiskey, because it's relatively stable and quasi illiquid, it just kind of sits there and holds value and gets appraised once a year. Generally ticks up in value once a year. So it's a way to just be a stable, a relatively stable cornerstone in your portfolio that just kind of stores value and accretes over time.
Right. So I'm assuming that at some point, these casks that people have invested in are actually sold. So, you know, because, you know, we want them to sit there for a long time, but they, you know, they have to be sold or we don't have whiskey that we can consume, right? So is that when people make the bulk of their money and then they can either completely cash out or they reinvest all those various things?
Yeah. So just like any other capital appreciation investment, the money is, or the profit is when you actually liquidate and sell. So that's why we help with the entire process. We're not just you know, leaving you with a barrel and going away. We're there to take care of it and have a government bonded, privately insured warehouse for however many years you want. And then eventually we're going to help you sell the barrel on to whoever the next owner is. Could be another investor, either internally or externally to us. That could be the distillery because their name's on the barrel and they can make a lot of money from continuing to hold it and bottling it. Or sell it to a bottling firm, an independent bottler.
Okay.
They need barreled whiskey. Otherwise, nothing to bottle, like you said. But at the end of the day, most of our clients aren't drinking all of their whiskey or bottling all of their whiskey. You can. But most people are treating it like you would a piece of land or that $1 million Picasso. You're just going to sell it on to its next enjoyer who is also going to take some years and probably profit off it eventually.
I love it. You know, and I mean, I'm fascinated with the fact that conceivably you could go visit your barrel, right? You know, take your picture with it. You know, now, you know, clearly this is not, you're just going to pop up and do it, you know, because these, you know, like you said, they're tightly regulated. You're not just wandering into these places. But I just, and I don't know why, I think that would be so much fun to go and take a picture with my barrel, or barrels. And so, but that does lead me to, and you and I are part of C-Suite Network, and that's, that is how we were introduced to each other. And I believe one of the questions that, that, you know, was asked when we were all, you know, one of our networking things was tastings. Do you do tastings?
You know, tastings are primarily for actual investors only.
Yeah. I can't just go.
I mean, we'll have you, Deb, you've had me on your podcast. We're friends now. You know, we call it the Whiskey Vault because it's a members only space.
Right.
We
don't have people. And it is a perk of being an investor.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, absolutely. We bring people in and people that are part of the team and members and investors here. Absolutely. We'd love to host you and your friends. I've had several of our investors here for some wonderful whiskey tastings, the C-Suite Network. You know, occasionally we have some lovely gatherings here as well. But certainly, you know, we want to, we built this beautiful room because we want to share whiskey with the world. You know, we could have put together a call center in the middle of nowhere, just, you know, made phone calls all day, but we built this beautiful room. This is not a fake background. This is a real.
Okay. I did. I assumed that it was a fake background. Good.
It's a beautiful space in Midtown Manhattan. And we built it because we wanted to share whiskey with the world. Because at the end of the day, even though we do this for profit, we share the wealth of whiskey with people. We do it because we love and believe in whiskey in a big way.
Right. I love that. Yeah. Oh yeah. There's a person walking back there. Yeah. It's, you know, and one of the things that I of course discovered, is that fine scotch is savored This is not, let's see how many shots we can consume in, this is for grownups. that is part of this, and maybe again, that's part of the mystique, part of the history. This is really something that you do consume and enjoy. And when we were doing one of the tastings, somebody did the let's take this shot glass and they were not, the people doing it were not happy. They were like, no, right. no, this is, yeah. it truly is. And somebody I believe has trademarked this, the sipping whiskey, but it all is. I mean, it is this something that is savored. And we also discovered that ice, no.
Yeah, I mean, there's very few wrong ways to drink a whiskey. Shooting it back is, I'd say, wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you do want to savor it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, look, this whiskey spent maybe 10, mm-hmm. 20, 30 mm-hmm. years in a barrel to get to your mouth.
Enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Respect it, is my opinion. But right. Some whiskeys do really well with a drop of water, especially if they're full strength and they haven't mm-hmm. been diluted at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you might need to dilute it a little bit.
It helps to open up the aromas in the oils right. and actually mm-hmm. makes it a more enjoyable experience. And some whiskeys actually are good with this very small, one big ice cube, so it doesn't water the whiskey down too much, but gives it a little bit of chill
right.
and it will mellow mm-hmm. out the intensity mm-hmm. for some whiskeys. Mm-hmm. But like you mentioned, for most people in the industry, they've put a lot of care into mm-hmm. designing right. their expression of whiskey mm-hmm. to be enjoyed mm-hmm. straight.
Right.
So that's right. how they appreciate you to enjoy. But everybody can do what they mm-hmm. want.
Right. And it is, to me, it's very much like wine. You know, if you have a fine wine, you are going to sip it. You're not going to mix it. You are not going to put ice cubes in it. And I remember one time I was with a friend of mine who is very much a wine connoisseur, and I thought she was going to pass out when somebody mixed red and white because they wanted pink.
I don't think that's how that works.
No, that, and it was like, oh dear. But yeah, I mean, it is something, and it's not just that you're savoring, it is a whole experience, right? You know, you're doing this with friends. Now, obviously, you can be sitting there watching TV or doing whatever. It's the whole experience. And same with wine. It's you're with friends, you're savoring, you're enjoying it, you're pairing it with the right foods, all of those various things.
Yeah. I mean, a whiskey can be a very multi-sensory mm-hmm. experience, right? You put it in a glass, you can swirl it around, enjoy the beautiful color, the amber, the gold, the red, the orange. You look at the oils as they cling to the sides, mm-hmm. the legs, as they call them mm-hmm. in wine and whiskey. Enjoy the nose. The nose to me is probably one of right. the most enjoyable parts of the whiskey.
Which, if you're in a shot glass, no. Yeah, that's why you have a larger glass.
Mm-hmm. A beautiful whiskey like the Glencairn glass or a very specifically designed whiskey mm-hmm. to let it breathe so that you can breathe it and enjoy it. And then, after all that, and sometimes you can be appreciated whiskey for minutes and minutes or mm-hmm. hours without even trying it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But eventually, expose your palate to it and see what you can pick out. And the fascinating thing about humans, obviously, is we're all such unique creatures mm-hmm. built of our own memories and mm-hmm. and sense or scent mm-hmm. is one of the most mm-hmm. powerful triggering mechanisms right. of the brain. Mm-hmm. So, what I pull out of a whiskey might be wildly different for mm-hmm. you. Sometimes you can get emotions and thoughts and feelings just from a whiff mm-hmm. of whiskey from some ancient memory that you forgot mm-hmm. about. It could be Granny's apple pie or...
Right.
Mm-hmm. A lot of peaty or smoky whiskeys mm-hmm. will remind me of being a teenager on the mm-hmm. on the beach in California. Some of my favorite memories being around a campfire.
Right.
You can get such mm-hmm. extraordinary and complex mm-hmm. Sensory experiences mm-hmm. out of all just water, barley, right. and yeast. What's mm-hmm. incredible.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And it is what I love is that you say it's different for everybody because. When I've gone to tastings, whether it's beer, wine, spirits, they will say, now you will, you'll get the oaky. And I'm like, nah, I'm not getting it. and I might pick up on a fruit or, obviously something else. And so I always find that fascinating too, is everybody's nose is different. Now, clearly the nose. I mean, the people who are doing this, you know, they have very well trained noses. Whether it's perfume, whether it's whatever they're doing, but you know, and again, food makes a huge difference. You know, if I'm going to have a stout beer, you better have chocolate cake, right? it's about the memories. You know, the other day somebody was talking to me about Coors Light. Okay, right? Now I'm from Colorado. And so, you know, we all, you know, you're from not where they had Coors, where you had to ship it, right? Where you had to sneak it across the lines.
right.
And so, you know, once we were of legal age, because we wouldn't drink illegally. It was Coors Light. It was available. It was cheap. And so, you know, that memory to me is of college. Yeah. Right. College. The get togethers with friends then, now it's like, I suppose if it was the only thing, I would drink Coors Light, but you know, it just doesn't have the appeal anymore, that it did. But I am one of those, I very rarely actually consume any type of alcohol. So when I do, I want to make sure I enjoy it, which is part of why in the cabinet downstairs, we have the expensive bottles of Scotch whiskey, and things like that. Because if I'm going to have one, I'm going to enjoy it, and that's what I love about it. And, you know, somebody else might think, you know, okay, several beers are great.
Yeah. I mean, what you're talking about is actually a really, in America, definitely globally, we're seeing it more and more, is a word called premiumization, which is really important because we are seeing a trend, especially in younger generations, that people are drinking less alcohol,
right?
Less volumes of actual alcohol. Mm-hmm. And that's for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. It's still hugely popular in an enormous industry. Mm-hmm. But what we can see is that people are actually spending more money on better spirits and better beers. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And last year, the entire spirits industry, the entire world almost, actually saw slight decreases in basically the business. And people were drinking less and the stuff was worth a little bit less. And that's just because it was 2022 was such a crazy good year back from COVID. 2023 was
Everybody was like, we can get out. We can drink.
The liquor stores are open then. Thank you. So it was kind of a return after a bumper year. So it wasn't unexpected. But the things that bucked the trend are single malt Scotch whiskey was actually up 10% when everything else was down. Premium whiskey. And Japanese whiskey was also doing very well.
Right.
So premium spirits, most respected spirits in the world are sort of right.
Well, and you know, let's be honest, you know, everybody is maturing, and I think our palates mature as we do that, you know. So the millennials are now discovering all of these things, and there's a heck of a lot of millennials, right? So, you know, as they discover those, and you know, and it's interesting because we talk about millennials in so many different ways. And I'm assuming you're a millennial, that, you know, they want in general more from life. And, you know, so they're not at their job simply to get a paycheck. They want to know where they're working makes a difference. You know, they want to raise their families differently. They want to live differently. And for anybody who fusses, that's my generation, I remind them, hello, we raised them. We've got all these millennials who are now going, oh, I like this idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, me and a lot of other people, I think really do everything that we do in life to seek and to have really high quality experiences. Mm-hmm. That can mean a lot of things, having high quality products, high quality spirits that we enjoy. Experience is in itself really wonderful to have a great whiskey. Mm-hmm. But also at the end of the day, you know, whiskey is there to, you know, bring a group of people together to have a whiskey with a friend, to build community. That's one of the reasons why we have the C-suite network here. Month is to get some wonderful people into in a room, to enjoy some great whiskeys and to enjoy each other's company. And those are the high quality experiences that a great whiskey can make happen when you have the right people and the right spirit in the room.
Right. You know, and again, you're slowly consuming. And so it's not, let's get, you know, because right now it's March Madness, right? And so a lot of people are going to bars and drinking lots. But yeah, when you're drinking a fine Scotch whiskey, you're consuming it more slowly. Now it's probably a little bit more potent, but yeah, it is. You can enjoy things a lot longer.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, where do you see things going from here? I mean, is it that, you know, that people, you know, we've kind of been touching on this, you know, will we start, you know, seeing maybe not, you know, obviously not Scotch whiskey, but more high end type of investment type of opportunities?
Yeah, I mean, we've been seeing it a lot. And for investors, a lot of choice is good, but a lot of choice is also hard.
Right, because then you're like, oh, I just don't know.
Yeah, it gets hard. And, you know, us being here and pioneering this industry, and especially with the structure that we do, huge amount of opportunity for us to, you know, get the word out and educate people on what's possible, why this is so attractive. But it's also brand new to so many people. So we, I mean, to be very candid with you, whiskey is such a, production is so limited. There's very little whiskey to go, which is why it's such an attractive niche again, supply and demand. But you know, we would like to introduce Americans to whiskey as an asset class, because people have been doing it around the world for decades. Americans have been left out. So we are seeing more and more and more entrance into the alternative space, and some people are doing a wonderful job and doing great work for their clients. And because it's a bit of the Wild West, some people are not. You know, we try to be the former and be as transparent and high integrity as we can. That's why we do all the work that we do to bring the best whiskey to America. But Americans do have a lot of choice now, which is a good thing. You just do need to be very circumspect about what assets you're getting into and make sure they're the right choice for you. So that's why we work hand in hand with everybody, making sure they're eligible, qualified, and that whiskey really can actually benefit their portfolios in a big way.
Right. Yeah. You know, and you know, you've mentioned, and this is so very true, this is very unique. Are there any other food or beverage products where people can invest like this? I was trying to think of some. I mean, it's not like, you know, that's my box of Cheerios, right? You know, it's, you know, and now obviously they can invest in the conglomerates, but that's just a regular stock or bond, you know, where you're buying something that is, you know, P&G or, you know, whatever. But are there any other type of products that are similar to this?
It's a pretty sparse field, and that's because most food and beverages don't have that longevity that whiskey and spirits do. So Scotch whiskey is, in my opinion, probably the tip of the pyramid in terms of effectiveness of a spirit or, you know, a food and beverage commodity, because it can last so long and can make attractive returns for so long. It makes it a really great long-term for your portfolio that you don't have to worry about. People have been making money on wine barrel investing for a long time.
That would be about the only thing similar that I could think of would be wine.
Yeah. So wine bottles and wine barrels, it's a little bit less predictable than whiskey for a variety of just...
You know, the weather, I mean, all sorts of things.
The terroir, and each year vintage can be different. It's not the same. It, you know, whiskey is just very consistent because of the distillation process. But people make good money on wine barrels and futures. I mean, there are American bourbon companies out there who do barrel investing. You know, they are very different markets than Scotch, because they're a very American focused product,
and bourbon is not such a long-term product, things like that.
Usually after 5 or 7 years, you really got to get rid of it and hopefully make a profit. Whereas Scotch can just go very, very long-term potentially. You know, otherwise they have, there are platforms out there for getting into like land and sometimes taking advantage of part of the yield of the farmland, forest investments, but it's not a very big industry or alternative asset class outside of those ones that I can think of.
Well, and you mentioned there are, for those others, a lot of outside factors. You know, weather obviously would be the biggest, you know, I mean, COVID, you know, wars. I mean, there's just so many things that can affect what happens to, you know, many of those other things. And you know, yeah, for one thing, Scotland is, you know, way up there. Not a lot of people pay attention to Scotland. It's an island, you know, and, you know, and has been doing just what it's been doing for hundreds of years without really any issues. You can even change from a queen to a king, and there's not a problem.
Easy. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so no economy is immune from changes and ups and downs. Scotch whiskey is the same. But if you compare like the last 150 or so years of the stock market as it's existed in America versus, you know, the Scotch whiskey economy or marketplace, it has had significantly fewer and less intense downturns. Mm-hmm. You know, in America, we've seen 5 major downturns in the last 10 or 20 years and like sometimes devastating downturns, mm-hmm. ruining mm-hmm. lives. You know, in Scotch whiskey, they had the whiskey lock, which was a bit of a overproduction versus demand in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And there was a little bit of a lull in the 50s and 60s just due to shifting changes. Prohibition was initially kind of rough, but then the bootleggers got their hands on scotch. Yeah. So they had those boom times.
Like we said, good and bad times. People are going to drink.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, even though there are potentially downturns, when you're in it for the long term, mm-hmm. even if there's a, you know, a 1 or 2 year reduction in mm-hmm. demand or, you know, market velocity, at the end of the day, this whiskey is going to be living in that warehouse for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. Just wait. And every year you wait, it gets you're older and potentially more valuable.
Right. I would guess that the whole COVID situation didn't really do too much to affect the industry. I mean, people still produced because it is not a factory. You know, and so it wasn't like you all of a sudden had hundreds of people that couldn't go to work. You know, it just kept going merrily along.
Yeah, I mean, there were precautions in place, and obviously everybody has a bit of a brave new world, but, you know, the distilleries kept on humming for the most part.
They're considered an essential industry.
Yes, realistically.
Let's be honest, in Scotland, they would be.
If they're not, it's in Scotland, it's the number one export. It's a huge driver of taxes for the crown and production and mm-hmm. local wages. So they, for the most part, mm-hmm. Kept on humming. Mm-hmm. They made it work. There was a little bit of a decrease in exports, and that was just because
people weren't going out to consume.
Right. There were no liquor stores. People were buying a lot of stuff mm-hmm. online. Mm-hmm. So it was weird times, obviously, but mm-hmm. they moved merrily along, and now we're mm-hmm. again back at record exports.
Right.
So it's, and a ton of people got into this as a hobby in mm-hmm. the last 5 years, right? It's you virtually, you can do virtual tastings, you can buy online, you can read. So mm-hmm. the whiskey world has exploded mm-hmm. in the last mm-hmm. 5 years. COVID was actually mm-hmm. quite good for whiskey aficionados mm-hmm. and the growth of it as a hobby.
Yeah. We did a virtual wine tasting that was fascinating. It was something through my husband's company when they normally would have gotten together physically. And so we all got these shipments of wine, and the spouses were allowed to participate because they figured, you know, they're going to no matter what. So we might as well encourage it. And obviously it was a very select group of people. This was not, you know, not a whole bunch. And they also sent the appropriate food. Now, unfortunately, it sat in the Georgia sun. And so we kind of lost some of our food, but you know, it was like being in person because we had the wine sommelier who was explaining, you know, all these things, and it was, you know, take a sip and eat a bite and, you know, and absorb the sniff for a while and, you know, and twirl the glass. I mean, because we got glasses, I mean, all sorts. It really was truly like being in person and it was fascinating to be able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. People, I mean, it's such a rich and deep industry, you know, a lot of get into whiskey with mm-hmm. some of the big global names, and mm-hmm. then you find out, oh wow, this is good. I should learn. Mm-hmm. I should experiment. And mm-hmm. there are really very truly interesting and rare bottles mm-hmm. that you get into, and very interesting and rare mm-hmm. barrels you get into mm-hmm. if you try. So it goes deep. Like mm-hmm. I said, there's $8 billion worth of the stuff just at wholesale export that leaves mm-hmm. Scotland every year to go around the world. Mm-hmm. And from 150 distilleries, 150 production mm-hmm. facilities mm-hmm. in Scotland.
Right.
There are 60,000 different expressions or mm-hmm. types of bottles that mm-hmm. are out there. So huge, mm-hmm. deep, rich, and interesting world to explore. Mm-hmm. And that's just Scotland. Don't even mm-hmm. think about Japan, which is a
right.
whole
other thing. Yeah. You know, and then obviously some of the others. But yeah, I mean, it's, and like I said, I mean, to me, this is fascinating because who knew that you could buy a cask?
Nobody. Yeah. America, nobody knows. We're very excited to be bringing the idea to this country. You know, whether you're a whiskey person or not, people kind of understand that generally the older a whiskey gets, the more people will pay for it. So if you have time and capital and patience, buy barrels of whiskey. It can be very attractive in the long term.
And again, folks, they're not sending you the casks. You know, you don't have to store them. They live where they're going to be properly taken care of and all of those things. But, you know, it's just like when you buy any other type of investment, it really doesn't come to you in most cases. But yeah, I mean, just the, like I said, I would love to, you know, invest in and go have my picture taken with my cask. I just think that would be so much fun. But yeah, I mean, it's, I love that this is so unique and that you're doing such a fascinating and great job with it.
Thank you. Yeah, we put a lot of time and effort and consideration into bringing this to this country, you know, to find the best partners in the world, the best whiskey, the best deal, to be able to offer it to people at an actual fair price with no markups is really pretty extraordinary. So, you know, we're excited to be here. And would love to invite you to come by Whiskey Vault next time you're in Manhattan.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, that does bring us pretty close to the end of the program. Tell us a little bit more about how people can get information about Braeburn. See, I did it right. Braeburn, right? We got to get the right in there. So Braeburn Whiskey. And we will have your LinkedIn profile in our notes because that's a great way to reach you. But, you know, how do people find out more about this industry?
Well, come on the website. So we're an international business. We are a regulated issuer of securities in the United States. We've got a U.S.-specific website and investor application, as we have to by law. So Americans, come on BraeburnWhiskey.com or Google Braeburn Whiskey. You'll come right to us. That's BraeburnWhiskey Whiskey with no E.
No E.
And Deb will put that on the screen, I'm sure. My name again is Taylor Costa Van Putten. I run the American business and manage the sales team here. And for certain clients, actually help work as their portfolio manager. So we might work together directly if you apply.
I love it.
International folks, people who are outside the United States, we're happy to work with you. Sometimes international, especially wealth managers, family offices, institutions, might be best served by talking to me here in America because we have this issue of securities. And sometimes they might be best off by talking to our international teams, but apply online and we'll get you referred to the right place and take good care of you and find out whether whiskey should be a part of your portfolio.
Right, right. You know, I didn't ask the obvious question. Do you have your favorite that you drink?
I, like you, don't drink a ton of alcohol, but when I do, I enjoy an extremely high quality Scotch or Japanese, right? I am a big fan of our distillery partners, and that's one of the reasons why we chose them, is whiskey pretty damn good. The Annandale Distillery, which has been reopened 10 years ago, has some incredible both peated and unpeated whiskey out on the shelves. Gets rave reviews. It won Double Gold in San Francisco and a variety of other great competitions. And if you're in the lowlands of Scotland, they've got a 5-star beautiful hotel and restaurant. Absolutely a smashing place. And the whiskey is extremely good. So that's one of my top choices. You know, if I'm having a good steak or something else hearty and I need a smoky peaty whiskey as a pairing, I usually look into a Lagavulin.
I love it. I love it. Well, oh my gosh, Taylor, do you have any final thoughts that you want to leave everyone with?
You know, there's a great saying in Scotland. If you take care of the whiskey will take care of you. And that's what we believe in. And that's what we try to embody and accomplish for our clients. You know, we're here from day one to day 1,000 or day 30,000, whatever this journey is going to look like for you. You know, we're here the entire length of the investment term. We want you to foster the best whiskey portfolio you possibly can, because eventually somebody is going to really enjoy that whiskey thanks to you. So do right by the whiskey and it'll do right by you. And that's why we try to do right by our clients. So anybody here that's curious, I don't care if you want to invest today or tomorrow or 10 weeks, next year, let's talk. Let's figure out whether whiskey should be a part of your portfolio. We're also very happy to accept referrals. Half of our business around the world is people telling their friends about us. So you have a friend that you think I should talk to, let me know.
Perfect. I love it. Well, I'm Deb Creer. I've been having such fun discussing whiskey on an early morning. Didn't have any, just had my coffee, right? But I have been having a wonderful discussion with Taylor Costa Van Putten of Braeburn Whiskey. And until next time, everyone have a great day.
Tune in for our next program for even more trends, best practices, and techniques for how to make your business a success. The Business Power Hour, hosted by Deb Creer, is proud to be part of the C-Suite Network.
The information presented during this broadcast reflects the opinions of Taylor Costa Van Putten and Braeburn Whiskey and should not be considered as a guarantee of possible future performance. Braeburn Whiskey offers whiskey cask investments in the United States only to verified accredited investors through an offering under Rule 506C of Regulation D. See the appendix for certain important regulatory information. All security transactions are effected through INTE Securities LLC, member FINRA SIPC. To view INTE Securities LLC, go to www.finra.org/brokercheck. For additional disclosures and appendix, please visit us.braeburnwhiskey.com/disclosures.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.